Back together again, you and I kicking off a brand new week and a new month as well on Monday, the 1st of July, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I offered up my thoughts on the role of First Lady Jill Biden in the current controversy over whether or not her husband should lead the 2024 White House race. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill also weighed in on the mounting pressure for President Joe Biden to drop out of the 2024 contest. And Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and Vice President of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill dropped by again. He analyzed the final two U.S. Supreme Court decisions of the current term, including one regarding an immunity claim by former President Donald Trump. So I generally don't start a show with a tweet, or I guess it's now a posting on X. Because, of course, for those of you who use X or Twitter, and those of you who don't use X or Twitter, who stay the heck as far away as you can from it, we're talking about what used to be called Twitter here, and now it's called X. And I noticed this morning because it was getting some traction. It was trending, as they say, in the social media universe. And it was what would have been called a tweet a couple of years ago, but now it's a posting on X. And a lot of times, the people who feel they have nothing to lose are the ones who are the most honest. The ones who say, hey, I'm going to say what I say and how I say it in the mode I'm going to do it in, because there's something bad happening here. And a lot of times those people say it because they know others can't. In this case, everybody knows. I mean, you have to be, seriously, you have to be dumb as a box of rocks. You have to be dumb as a carload of boxes of rocks to know that there are people close to President Biden, both in his family, in the White House staff, and people in Congress, including probably our own Connecticut delegation, 5 House members and 2 Senate members, who want to say what they really think, but they can't. Because there's stuff that's said, and you and I have this in our lives too, in our personal lives, our love lives, our family lives, whatever, our work lives. Like, you know what the score is, but you just can't talk about it. So the posting on X, formerly Twitter, I'm going to start with, apparently comes from a guy named Bill Ackman. Full disclosure, I never heard of this guy. But the minute I saw him put this up and I read the first few lines of this, I said, let me Google this guy, because he sounds like a big donor. And he is. Bill Ackman is a liberal Democratic hedge fund guy, which is fine. There are big donors on the left and there are big donors on the right. On the right, you have numerous big donors out there. The widow of Sheldon Adelson, she's a huge donor on the right. The Koch brothers, or the surviving Koch brother and their foundation. So again, let's not go kindergarten here and thinking it only comes from the right or the left. No, it comes from both. Anyway, a billionaire Democratic donor, Bill Ackman, put this up on X. So he has no more you-know-whats to give. He doesn't give a anymore, because he sees what's going on and he can say it. And a lot of times these donors get to say what they want to say because they're cutting big checks, the mother's milk of politics, and they're not beholden to anyone, which is an attitude that I kind of admire here. So billionaire Democratic donor Bill Ackman says this: I no longer blame President Biden for not stepping aside. He no longer has the mental acuity to make important judgments about himself. It is becoming increasingly clear, however, that the fault lies with Jill Biden. First Lady Jill Biden becomes irrelevant the moment her husband is no longer president. No more Air Force One, no more glamorous life, no more White House dinners for dignitaries, no more being treated like a queen when traveling the world. I'm sorry to be harsh, But what has become entirely clear is that the First Lady values what is best for herself over her husband's health and the safety and security of the country at large. He continues. He's not done. Stress is a contributor to neurological deterioration, and the doctors must have told her so. Think about how much stress she's putting Joe Biden under by making him continue. Now in public appearances, she treats him like an infant. In parentheses, quote, you answered every question, unquote, and he's referring to the post-debate shindig the other night. Or an old man as she walks him off the stage, and she gets the crowd wound up and cheering at events. Perhaps she thinks the crowd is cheering for her. Her power has clearly grown as he gets weaker, and she likes the feeling of power. She speaks for the president when he can't or when he's napping. She tells his team and staff when he is available and when he's not. She likes being in control. We all do. Which begs the question, how many decisions of the president are actually made by the First Lady? Her friends, and friends are in quotation marks, likely don't tell her the truth as they want to continue to be invited to the White House and to be able to say that they're friends with the First Lady and the President. Jill Biden is destroying her own legacy along with the President's. The whole thing would be just a tragedy for the Biden family if it didn't put the country at greater risk in a world turmoil. Perhaps she didn't understand what in sickness and in health meant. Wow. That's called scorched earth. And he said it because, I don't know this to be a fact, he's likely heard it. Remember, when you're standing in life is defined by a word with a B in front of it, the word billionaire. When with your name the word billionaire is attached, you don't care oftentimes what you say because you're saying, you know what, screw this, I'm writing them checks. And usually when you write those checks, you have access. And when you have access, you hear things. And you hear things from people who tell you stuff, hoping you'll say it because they can't. Because they can't or won't, because they like their gig and they don't want to be blackballed in the future if they still want to work in D.C. or the surrounding area as the guy or the gal that blew the whistle on X, 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 Y, and Z. See what I'm saying here? So I am glad he said that. Somebody had to say it. And the important thing is, it's what everybody is thinking. Again, I go back to last week, and everybody was aghast and appalled, and you heard it over the weekend. Oh, my God, we didn't think it would be this bad. What exactly would have made you not think that? Is anybody paying attention? Maybe they are, but they're too afraid of the First Lady. Listen, every woman wants to, every good wife wants to protect her husband. Every good girlfriend wants to protect her boyfriend. Every good husband wants to protect his wife. Every good boyfriend wants to protect their girlfriend, and on and on and on. Same-sex couples and all that. You see what I'm saying here? But again, and here's the other thing here. And by the way, if you want to chime in on this, love to hear your thoughts. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. We're hearing all weekend, you probably heard it here on our top of the hour news on WICC. And if you watch any of the news channels, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, or whether you're watching PBS, ABC, NBC, CBS, all the alphabets you can gather in one place here. You heard the same thing over the weekend. Well, despite reports that they're not having this discussion, the Biden family is meeting at Camp David to talk about whether he should go on. My God, the last people he should be listening to is his family. What in the hell is his family going to tell him? Hey, Dad. Hey, honey. Hey, Gramps. Stay in. We like the gravy train. Look, folks, if he had been even marginally okay in that debate the other night, nobody would have been saying this. But my God. Again, I will ask the overriding question, and this isn't a Democrat or Republican question. What's China thinking? What's Xi Jinping thinking? What's Russia thinking? What's Vladimir Putin thinking? What are our allies in England and France and Spain and Italy and all the other nations that we band together with? Some of the nations in the old Eastern Bloc that are trying to fend off Russia. What in the heck are they thinking? No. You don't listen to your family when it's apparent that you should step aside. Your family likes the gravy train. Now, sometimes your family can't deal with stuff because emotions get in the way. I get it. I was telling somebody today earlier here at the station at Connoisseur, what reminds me now is something that what's going on now reminds me of something that went on with my father, who passed away way back in 1998. And toward the end, and listen, he had late onset Parkinson's, so much so that the specialists at Yale, who were great to us, they were stumped. Because they interviewed us about my father's level of activity on X day, and it's like his ability to just function and move and walk and speak and show emotions. I mean, it fell off a cliff. And I remember the doctors telling me, Mr. Pacelli, are you sure he was active on this date? I said, yeah, ask anybody in our family. So, make a long story short, my dad was in his closing days, and we all know it. I mean, I'm okay with death when it's a progression. Some, you know, the horrible deaths are the ones that happen like that. And it was somebody that was talking to you the day before and they're not here for whatever reason. But my father had, you know, the long goodbye. So I was talking to one of the doctors. As those of us know who take care of elderly parents and patients, you talk to a lot of doctors a lot of times. But I'll never forget this. He called me because he was the attending physician that day that we had to take my father to the Yale ER because they heard something in his lungs and the Parkinson's had gone to the point where he was aspirating food. Not good. That's a sign of the end coming. And I was asking him about certain treatments or whatever, because as a human being, and this is my point, as a family member, you never want to face reality. And if you do, it sucks. And I was asking him something, and he paused, and I heard a silence on the other end of the phone. And he said to me, I'll never forget these words. He didn't yell. He didn't scream. He said to me, Mr. Pacelli, it's time to let your father die. Now, I'm not alluding to Joe Biden's mortality. I'm not here. Don't jump on me for that. But with this whole thing going on, with the past few days, I've kind of been reliving that. And to the point where I told the doctor, Doctor, I appreciate your frankness. And yes, I know he's not getting better. But I'm kind of navigating the care here for the whole family. So please let me talk to my aunts, his sisters about it. They understand, too, and I'll get back to you. He said, fine. Now, there's a flip side to this. Now, the story's not over. We'll get to that momentarily. But, boy, when I hear that Joe Biden is relying, apparently, on the counsel of his wife and his sister. Apparently, he doesn't listen to anybody else, from what I've read over the weekend in several spots. He judges everything by what his wife says and what his sister says. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, not bad. I've been spending a lot of my day trying to console my Democratic friends and to urge my Republican friends not to get overconfident and cocky.
I think, Terry, those are two well-intentioned, well-thought-out positions. You and I have been, and a bunch of other people have been chatting about this on social media. Terry, and this is the first time we have chatted since the debate last Thursday night. Terry, with all due respect to Mr. Biden, he is the president. He was duly elected. I'll give him that. Terry, why is anybody surprised at what we saw last Thursday night? I mean, have they not been following the news and the videos that are out there? I'm astonished, Terry, that people were gobsmacked about this. What were they following?
Well, I think most people figured that he could rise to the occasion at least a little bit better than he did, you know, because I mean, there are ways of sort of hyping yourself up. You can take a shot of B12 and you can try to get your adrenaline up and really get everything in your favor for that hour and a half and be on your best. But it was the worst. It was like he's an old guy who was obviously in decline. Plus, obviously, he had a bad night. I don't know. I mean, is that the way he is all the time? I would hope not. Otherwise, you know, I might fear for the country. But, you know, we looked at I went out to dinner with my wife, and I went out to dinner with my brother-in-law and his girlfriend. And we came back just in time to watch the beginning of the debate.
Oh, boy.
And after about 5 minutes, we just started looking at each other. And I, after about another 10 minutes, I opened up my Twitter feed, and I saw Nicholas Kristof had called on Biden already to withdraw from the nomination.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is – and then it just kept on going. And finally he said, I finally killed Medicare. And when he said that, I said to myself, and I said to my brother-in-law, you know, this is a full-scale Hindenburg-style disaster. Oh, the humanity. And it really was that bad.
Yeah.
So, I'm not shocked by the fact that he's in decline. I was shocked by how bad it actually was. And that was the extent of my shock.
Yeah, and Terry, I felt bad. Listen, I'm not thrilled with some of his policies, but Terry, I have two issues. The first one is what I've said on this program for about the last year or so. What are they saying in Beijing with Xi Jinping and his cronies there? Vladimir Putin, Terry, had been exchanging shots of vodka with people in the Kremlin. Honestly, and I'm not saying that to be a wise ass, but seriously, when that is on worldwide television, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that the press hasn't been better on this and exposing this. So you've heard of the Daily Mail and London.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tabloid, so take it for what it's worth. But they interviewed a bona fide expert in geriatric psychiatry at University College London. And he says that these fluctuations, quote, these fluctuations and dips in attention that Biden has are a key symptom of Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I looked at that and I thought to my mother-in-law, when she had Parkinson's, she had the same gait, the same sort of shuffling gait, and the same slack-jawed stare. And so I do have a suspicion that he might have Parkinson's. What I think it's got to happen here is the press, lots of people have been calling on the convention to be open so they can nominate somebody else. I think that what the press needs to do is really focus on the medical aspect, demand to see medical records of the president, because how could people make an informed decision
if they don't know,
come November?
Yeah, and Terry, you and I have been in the news business and the commentary business long enough now, and I think they see that, Terry, and to your point about the press rattling the cage on this, you know how this works, though, Terry. If you or I were in the D.C. press corps, and we wrote a story about this, or we are working for one of the radio or TV networks, and you push this, you end up on the you know what list if there's a Democratic winner in November. And I think, Terry, that of course everybody sees this in the press pool, but they probably say, gotta play nice, or I'm gonna be persona non grata for the next 4 or 8 years. You know how this works.
Yeah, well, that does happen, I've seen that happen even on the local level. You know, when I was a journalist, yes, if you report certain things that people don't want you to report, certain public officials especially, then you lose access to them, and there is a price to pay for this. But this is too important to worry about losing a source.
Mm.
We're talking about the leader of the free world, who may be quite ill, and who, if he is elected, I can't even imagine that he would make it through his term if he is elected.
No,
is a real crisis. So, they've got to do something. I did find it interesting because there were a couple of stories in the Connecticut press about about the reaction of some of the people, some of the elected officials in the state. And apparently Chris Dodd, good old Chris Dodd,
he of the waitress sandwich, but we won't go
waitress
into the
sandwich.
Yes, go ahead.
Betty Kennedy.
Yes.
Yeah. And he apparently is coordinating the response of some of these, according to the Connecticut Mirror, Mark Pazniokas, he is sort of coordinating the response of a lot of elected officials in Connecticut. Chris Murphy was confronted with this, and he really didn't want to talk about it, as you can imagine, because what could he possibly say except what Dick Blumenthal said? This election is about more than just one night's debate performance. And that's pretty much the message. But, you know, it is about more than that, because does anybody seriously think that the president is going to come back in a second debate and do a whole lot better?
Yeah.
Does anybody seriously think that he's going to reverse this? This doesn't – I mean, look, I'm 67, and I don't see myself getting better every day.
No.
I'm not in, you know, a dramatic decline, but this – these things don't get better with age, and I don't understand why people can't just acknowledge that. But you know, there's a political price to be paid for that.
And speaking of acknowledging, you know that Roy Occhiogrosso, there's a name out of Democratic heritage here in the state, is saying that, you know, I read his comments today, and he's basically not pulling any punches as well.
Yeah, well, he's a lot more candid than Murphy and Blumenthal, because, you know, Roy's not running for anything. He doesn't really have to worry about, you know, getting on the S list by speaking out of turn. But, you know, he basically said, look, if the president, and this is a quote, if the president stays in place, he's going to lose. Everybody has good days and bad days, but not everyone is 81 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think Roy is absolutely correct on that. I know him. I think he's a straight shooter. But, you know, you look at some of the reaction. Nancy DiNardo, who was the, you know, the chair of the state Democratic Central Committee, she says, we know what he will do in the White House, and one debate performance doesn't change that. Sound familiar? The talking points went out. So there we have it.
They did. And before we end with something lighter, you struck a little bit of an emotional nerve with me, Terry, because my father as well had Parkinson's, and it took him, he had late onset Parkinson's, and it took him from a very vivacious, gregarious guy who could work in a store for 8 hours a day and then do the gardening for another 4 hours. Terry, the same thing you said, when I see the stiff gait, the blank stares, the raspy voice, oh, I'm hearing my dad all over again. So, you know, they can't can't fool the millions of people who have encountered this. But let's end on a pull a 180 here, and let's talk about something that's become almost a national joke, but not to this guy. It's Bobby Bonilla Day. Terry, explain that to the uninitiated who may have heard that but are going, what is this Bobby Bonilla Day?
Yeah, well, of course, it had to do with a contract that Bobby Bonilla signed, I don't know, what was it, 20 years ago or more, with the New York Mets. And there was lots and lots of deferred money. You know, that's what happened. He left and still gets, I don't even know how much longer he gets this, $1.3 million or whatever it is, every July 1st. The payment goes to him. Of course, we learned a lot about deferred money from Shohei Ohtani, right? Because so much of his contract is deferred. It'll be interesting to see after Ohtani is retired and gone How much, will June, will July 1st be both Bobby Bonilla Day and Shohei Ohtani Day? Too much for one day.
Yeah, and in fact, Terry, it turns out what they say, you know, they all we saw was the $70 million for 10 years or whatever it was. And it turns out, Terry, it, because of all this kind of, you know, funky accounting that all these teams do, no, he's not making $70 million a year. He's making not chump change, but he's making $45 million or something like that. But the whole thing with Bobby Bonilla, the ironic thing is, you know, the Mets are like laughing stocks now, which they shouldn't be, because the fact that they did that and created like this pseudo holiday actually freed up a lot more money that they were able to actually get better with. But I guess the common person, Terry, who is, you know, digging a ditch for the DOT when it's 110 degrees, they can't relate to Bobby Bonilla Day.
No, they can't. And they can't, you know, relate to the whole strategy, perhaps, of deferring all that money and then still owing it down the line. But $1.193 million, which is what the Mets are paying him every year.
There it is.
That's chump change for the Mets. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, when a guy named Cohen runs them. Terry, good thoughts as well. I understand you're going to be off for a couple of weeks, so we'll talk to you down the road, my friend, okay?
All right, very good. Thanks very much, and have a good rest of the summer.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it. Terry Cowgill, he blogs at the Connecticut News Junkie and also at Substack.com. And when you go to Substack, you search for Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. That's his blog. But yes, that's why Bobby Bonilla didn't know it's not a real holiday. But he gets $1.1 million every July 1st because about 25 years ago, the Mets said, hey, we want to get rid of you and we want to open up your roster spot and we could use all that money we owe you to better the team. And he said, well, fine, I'll leave. Goodbye. But you still owe me the money, which they do. A lot of these guys, the only contracts that are not guaranteed are football contracts. Now, there is guaranteed money there, but football contracts aren't worth the paper they're printed on. Do they still print them? I don't know. But baseball, basketball, and hockey contracts are guaranteed. So sometimes to make a player go away in other sports, if you still owe them the money, they got to say, well, okay, we're going to pay you, but we'll be paying you and your kids and your grandkids. One of our legal eagles to join us right now. We have him on a lot on this program. He is the Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and VP of Legal Affairs, Mike O'Neill, to talk about the last two Supreme Court cases of this term. There was another one we should get to as well. And from the conservative point of view, Mike O'Neill. Hey, Mike, it's Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Mike, are you having to talk any of your progressive friends off the ledge there at the in the area there? Because, man, some of the reaction to this immunity case here, it sounds like there are mass heads cracking here.
Yep, there are. And, I mean, it's interesting when we talk about this. I was talking about it with my colleagues around the office here, and sometimes – you know, you almost have to be careful that this case was prosecuted and came up to the Supreme Court, because here's my bottom line with this. Mm-hmm. The left has Donald Trump's opponents have decided that they were going to try to prosecute him through the courts, engage in this lawfare that we've talked about, rather than just simply focusing on defeating him in the political realm. And it has led to all of this stuff that we're talking about. Because now we have this unprecedented opinion, case of first impression, regarding presidential immunity in the mm-hmm. criminal law context. And now we have this kind of roadmap out there about what constitutes official, what constitutes unofficial action. And I can't help but think to myself, you know, for hundreds of years, this country functioned with kind of this stuff. It was kind of this silent law. You know, presidents were under this impression, okay, well, there might be this potential that I'm subject to criminal prosecution for this, so I might want to stay in my lane, but I don't really know. But it's kind of a gentleman's agreement. Well, all that stuff has been cast out the window because of this lawfare prosecutions. And again, I surmise, if you know, my personal opinion here is that if the left had spent as much energy trying to promote the agenda and the accomplishments of President Biden versus trying to wage this unceasing lawfare, perhaps things might be going better for them from a political standpoint. And certainly from a legal standpoint, we're entering into all this new territory of heretofore unknown territory that we're now all having to contend with.
Yeah, Mike, and look, I haven't spent 5 seconds in law school, but I read, you know, Capsule, and I've gone deeply into it on SCOTUS blog last hour, which I love. That's a great site. And I said, well, okay, so they say, what is in the purvey of the official duties of a president?
Right.
Does have immunity, but he can still do stuff not part of his official duties that he can get prosecuted for. And I'm like, well, that makes sense to me. And yet I'm reading, well, does this mean that Donald Trump or any president, because this is precedent setting, does this mean now a president can assassinate a leader and essentially get away with it? What are your thoughts when you hear questions like that?
Well, right. I mean, assassinate a leader. I'm going to have to give you a little lawyerly answer here.
Yeah.
Because when you say assassinate a leader, you talk about, I think conducting the drone strikes that President Obama conducted years, you know, during his presidency, mm-hmm. where he admittedly ordered a drone strike that killed American citizens. Now, so is that an assassination of an American citizen without due process? I mean, so you could argue that. Now, on the other hand, of course, I'd argue that he was acting in his official capacity, in his core functions as president of the United States, mm-hmm. taking necessary action in an accelerated, high-pressure, high-stress environment where he has to make an executive decision for the safety of the American people. And so I would argue that, you know, in that context, he's functioning with his core capacity and he is exempt from prosecution. So, of course, the statements here that, you know, I think, the SEAL, quote-unquote, SEAL Team 6 kind of scenario where the president orders a SEAL Team 6 to go and assassinate his political rival. Certainly that would fall into that's a criminal act. There's criminal provisions on that. And mm-hmm. it's in the context of an unofficial act. So I don't see how those bill of horrors is going to come down. So I think that we can move aside from that. But what is important, though, Paul, is that there are, you know, there's three concepts. There's this new test now. There's this new buckets that the Supreme Court has said.
All right.
He said, look, when the president's acting within the context of his core Article II powers, again, then the pardon power, removal of officers within the executive branch, that he enjoys absolute immunity. When he's acting under the official acts, you know, as you just pointed out, there's a presumption that his actions, that there is going to be immunity. Again, that presumption is subject to rebuttal. The prosecution or can rebut that presumption, but the burden is on the prosecution. He is entitled to some sort of immunity for his official acts. And then, of course, there is no immunity for his unofficial acts, as you said, on unofficial conduct.
So, and I guess, Mike, the immunity theory here is to keep presidents, in other words, once they get out of office. Is this a thought to keep away, folks hanging in the bushes? Okay, President so-and-so, you're out of office now, so we're going to come after you for X, Y, and Z you did in office. And then they would argue, well, no, that was a core power. Is that what we're looking for, to not have us devolve into some banana republic here? Is that why the immunity argument is there?
Well, I think that's one of them, but I think that's actually the second point, and I think that's an important point. I really want to look at if you want to look at the opinion of the court, the framers, and I'm just quoting from the opinion, sought to encourage energetic, vigorous, decisive, and speedy execution of the laws by placing in the hands of a single constitutionally indispensable individual the ultimate authority that, in the respect of other branches, the Constitution divides among many. So they see that the president has to operate with this energy and vigorous and decisive and speedy execution of his duties, and he can't be necessarily concerned with whether this is going to be, to loop in your point, whether I'm going to be subject to criminal prosecution when I leave office for this. So I have to work. Oftentimes, the president, as we all are aware of, if there's a national emergency that occurs, the president has to act decisively. Imagine, like, pull you back down to 9/11. President Bush had to act decisively in ordering the jets, you know, remember those horror stories where he said, okay, we have to order our military, our Air Force to shoot down passenger liners if they weren't reporting in. So in that instance, think about that war footing we were on in that. We needed President Bush to operate energetically and decisively without concern that when he leaves office, he's going to be subject to some sort of, you know, criminal prosecution for his actions.
Mike, so now the court, what did it do? It kicked it back to a lower court to actually decide what is a core function and what isn't. Talk a little about that, and why did that happen?
Yeah, right. So they're going to, so the Supreme Court offered did some opinion does offer some guidance onto what, where its positions might posit, might fall on this, but it ultimately remanded. See, in our court, in our system of justice, the courts that do the fact finding are the district courts. They're the courts of first impression. Mm-hmm. So it's incumbent upon them to do the initial analysis and analyze the facts to the law. Now, what's going to happen is the bevy of facts that are alleged in Jack Smith's indictment in the Washington D.C. prosecution and the prosecution in the D.C. district or D.C. district court are going to have to weigh against this opinion. Now we have the court was fairly decisive on one thing. They said, look, when he was talking to his Justice Department officials, when he was talking about to his deputy attorney generals, when President Trump was talking about to his exerting, you know, so-called pressure on his DOJ officials mm-hmm. in the context of the January 6th, that is a core function. That means the president can tell his subordinates within the executive branch what to do. He's operating within his core powers. However, when he was having discussions with Mike Pence regarding the certification of the vote, that might or might not be. That might be official. It might be unofficial. We're going to have to see this. You're going to have to weigh the equities and look at the historical tests and precedent that they've put forth and the language of this opinion and have the judge and make this initial determination. And then again, the conversations with state and party officials and communications on regarding January 6th, again, that's remanded. That might be unofficial. That might be official. But Chief Justice Roberts was careful to note, like, look, this is a case of first impression. These are very rare cases. These issues and facts need to germinate at the district court and the circuit court level before they get up to the Supreme Court. And, you know, one other thing, this is an important point that was made. I saw somewhere on X made, and I'm not going to claim ownership of this. You know, everybody, I want to turn your attention to Florida. Everybody comes down on Judge Eileen Cannon for going slow, moving slowly through this,
okay.
You know, and whereas the judge in D.C., everybody's doing, oh, she's rocket docketing this. She's moving it quickly through. Oftentimes you have to take your time because these are significant issues that will be for posterity. Again, the issue on presidential immunity, Paul, is not just Donald Trump's presidential immunity. It's presidential immunity from criminal prosecution.
Exactly.
Going forward for our history of our country. So we have to get this right, and we have to take our time and make sure we get the right answers here rather than the fast answers.
Mm. And finally, Mike, there was another opinion that came out today, and that one, you know, was not the sexy one that everybody's talking about now. But in about the 2 minutes we have left, summarize that one for us, because that could affect a lot of people in what they're allowed to hear, see, or say.
Right. This is in 2021, Florida and Texas had statutes regulating social media companies and their other internet platforms. And the question here is whether these laws in Florida and Texas respectively were violating these policies affected the editorial ability and the content of social media platforms. And so NetChoice and communications industry, all of the big internet company, you know, big social media platforms mm-hmm. brought suit against this, alleging a First Amendment challenge to these two laws. So what happened was really is the court kind of remanded this case back. They said, look, you had competing opinions. You had one, the Fifth Circuit saying that the laws did impugn on the, did violate the First Amendment. You had another circuit court saying that they didn't, they were permissible. So you had a split in the circuits. So, but the Supreme Court kind of resolved this by saying, look, we're going to vacate these two opinions. We're going to remand it. And we're going to say neither the 11th Circuit nor the Fifth Circuit conducted an analysis of the proper analysis of whether there's a First Amendment violation here. So essentially what you're going to have here is a redo. I mean, you know, states have to be – the bottom line with this, Paul, again, is I'm a First Amendment purist. Mm-hmm. Even for states, any kind of government entity, whether it be a state or the feds, if they're going to enact any kind of policies that seek to regulate the speech of internet platforms or any kind of media platforms at this point, you have to be very skeptical about those laws. And so we're going to kind of get a redo on that. But, you know, the real that's an important case. I'm not saying that's an important case. But really, the big takeaway here today is from my perspective, from a common law, is that Trump is the presidential immunity case. It's going to be something that's going to be with us for posterity. Constitutional law scholars are going to be dissecting it. They're already dissecting it right now. Lawyers are dissecting it across the country. And I don't really think we're going to know about the implications of it, how it really implies for, you know, years down the road, how this all shakes out.
Interesting.
But for right now, the bottom line is the Trump. Just to get back to this Trump, just for a bottom lining this, it looks like most likely that the Jack Smith prosecution in Washington, D.C. is most likely going to be pushed back post-election. So that kind of really puts a a speed bump here for the Jack Smith prosecution in Washington, D.C.
And we can deal with that post-election. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation, attorney and VP of Legal Affairs. Mike, as always, great stuff. We thank you for your time. Take care.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
All right, thanks. And on that second story, that second ruling, you see, folks, it's I talk about it on this show. Lisa does. Melissa does. You know, can states clamp down on social media platforms, internet chatter and stuff like that to protect kids? And you see, with the Supreme Court is looking at a case that they weren't definitive on, but they kicked it back saying, these laws in Texas and Florida that are designed to, you know, ostensibly stop spreading bad information and keep kids safe. There's always that First Amendment argument that a lot of them run up against.